Welcome to Season 9, Episode 15 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 7th of June and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm back! It's me,
Yay!
I'm back. And joining me this week are Alan.
Hello, hello, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
What a lovely tan you have.
Oh yes. I'm surprised you can see from all the way over there. Laura.
Hiya.
And Martin.
You didn't Hello. Comment on my tan.
Me or Alan?
You're breaking up.
So, Alan, what have you been doing?
So, a while ago, I may have mentioned on here that I created with Stuart Langridge a thing called Marvin, which resides at marvin.popey.com, which is a thing that allows Ubuntu app developers to test their applications on phones that they don't own. So many developers don't own every different shape and size of device. Mm-hmm. But one of the limitations I had was that I didn't connect any of them to the network. So if your application was a fully local one, that was fine. But if your application ever wanted to reach out to the internet to do something, or it was a cloud-based application, basically lots of applications it was no good for, because right. they want to connect to the internet and you just get a blank screen.
Is this because it's your network and you don't want to connect random people's apps to your network?
Yeah. Basically because it's running in my house. And I didn't want to just have them connected to my Wi-Fi. So I bought a secondhand Netgear router off of eBay, and I now have another network in my house, which they are connected to. It's still in my house, but they're connected to it, and it's locked down very differently and separated and firewalled from my own network. So now app developers can upload their click packages, which they would want tested on a phone, and they can test on all of the devices that are over there, which I think there's 6 devices, and it will just run on all of them and connect to the network if needed. And Ooh. It works. Yeah.
Magic.
And funky.
I went to have a look at it earlier, and I got sidetracked by the video.
Oh, yeah. There's a link, there's a video. If you go to the About page, the video Laura's talking about, click on that. If you go to marvin.popey.com.
Is that
FAQ page, I think.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that video.
Yeah. So that's that.
Yay. Oh.
So, Laura, where did you get your tan?
On the Isle of Wight.
Gosh.
I went to the Isle of Wight for the weekend to hack dinosaurs again on the Saturday. And then on the Sunday, I went to the beach because it was really hot weather.
Very nice, too.
And how are the dinosaurs?
Hackier?
Have you sufficiently hacked them now?
Yeah. Well, other people... I was getting the desktop dinosaur that I put together last time back working again the way it had done, because it had been changed. And then somebody else could decouple its parts so that we could do other things with it, but I don't think that got finished. And I got sidetracked by building a model crane.
Cool.
Are you going to put a dinosaur suit on the model crane so it looks more dinosaur-y?
Actually, it's not a crane. It's one of those robotic arms that you control by USB.
Right, yes.
So
I'm not aware of these, but they sound awesome.
Yeah, so when I've brought it home to finish it. So when I finish it, I'll take a picture.
Cool.
Sam played with one of those robotic arms at the Egham Raspberry Pi Jam a little while ago, and the bloke who owned it was encouraging Sam to basically smash things to bits with it, which was good fun, and he thoroughly enjoyed.
I bet. So. Cool.
Right. Well, with that out of the way, let's get on with the show.
And now it's time for some news. Following his departure from OnCloud Inc., Frank Karliczek has announced the formation of NextCloud, which Ooh. Is a fork of OnCloud, I believe.
Mm.
Right. So
and it's not just Frank either, is it? It's a number of other developers and members of the own cloud company have come to NextCloud.
Yes. Yeah. So this is all of the people who have been announcing their resignation from own cloud over the past few weeks. This is where they've all gone.
Is this an OpenOffice, LibreOffice thing?
Kind of.
Or a Linux format, Linux. No.
Yeah, Linux format, Linux voice. Yeah.
That's or, I got them the right way around.
X386 Xorg for the older people.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of weird because shortly after the announcement was made, OwnCloud Inc.
announced that they were closing because all of their creditors had decided not to give them any more credit. And so they had to fold and lay off the remaining employees. But that was, I think, well, there was OwnCloud Inc. in the US and OwnCloud, I don't know how you say it, GmbH in Germany, I think, which still exists, and the OwnCloud Foundation. So OwnCloud does still kind of exist as a thing, but the future of it is now increasingly uncertain.
Right, especially because the most passionate people who advocated and developed the platform have left and are now working on the fork.
Yes. Yep.
So it seems to be that they didn't agree with the kind of ethos of the company and its short-term perspective on with shareholders and things. So that was the sort of implication from what they said about what they thought an ideal company was like.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Frank originally wrote he was departing and he cited that the community was at odds with the commercial interests, it was a bit opaque and it wasn't very clear. But Frank's been on a couple of sort of Q&As and clarified the point. And I have to sort of admire his reasons for doing this because it's quite a risk, you know, leaving the company that you founded, leaving the project that you founded to create a new one. And the reasons for doing it is to make sure it's a proper open source project with no contributor license agreements, that's got a foundation to back it, to look after trademarks, but the whole thing is transparent. So
it is, while it is a risk, I think it's unlike, you know, in the corporate world, someone leaving to go and set up a new venture. He can actually take the assets with him, the assets being the code.
But not the brand.
Well, not just the code. The knowledge is as much of an asset as the code, yeah. and he has.
And he's also said they will accept OwnCloud customers who've paid for support. They will, Nextcloud will provide support for OwnCloud customers if they want to move over, which even if they haven't moved over to Nextcloud yet, even if they're still running OwnCloud on their, with their original like license or whatever, they'll still support them, which I thought was a very gentlemanly thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been very impressed with the motives for doing this and the answers to the questions that have been posed. So yeah, I should be looking forward to seeing how Nextcloud develops. I think they're being sort of financed by SpreadMe, who are a WebRTC video conferencing platform, and they seem to be quite hot at the moment. They've won awards and things.
Yeah,
and it looks as though that's where sort of Nextcloud is getting its stable investment from. Maybe good other stuff. Places as well, but they're keen to mention SpreadMe.
Good luck to them.
Every opportunity at the moment, so I think they're the primary investor.
In other news, Indiegogo have announced a partnership with Arrow Electronics.
This sounds rather cool.
Yes. So Arrow manufacture and distributes lots of different electronic stuff. I'd never heard of them before I went to Nuremberg to the Embedded World thing, and they have giant stands there with tons of electronics all over it. And it seems everyone knows who they are. And they even had stands on other people's stands. They were that big. And so they're providing services to people who are creating projects on Indiegogo, so crowdfunding campaigns that, you know, have electronics in them somewhere. And they've said they will provide up to $500,000 in benefits as a what they call a total package. So Arrow review the Indiegogo campaigns and they award badges based on technical merit, they say. And I think that's to give some credibility to the project. So if you're looking at a project from the outside as a consumer, a potential backer, and you see a badge, an Arrow badge, you might give it more, it might have more credibility than one that doesn't have one, for example. They also get design and prototype support from Arrow and maybe also some additional funding from Arrow. And then finally, supply chain and manufacturing support, which is one of the trickiest parts, I understand, for many of these crowdfunders, where a lot of them fail is actually the final delivery of the thing. And having a company the size of Arrow behind them sounds like a good project, a good thing.
Question, are Arrow providing these services for free or at a reduced rate?
I don't know what the deal is there. I would imagine there's going to be a cut for them in them providing the supply chain and manufacturing support. I would imagine there's going to be some, you know, because you're going to have to pay for that from someone, aren't you? So
yeah.
You know, I would imagine there's some massive discount there, but you're still going to use them.
The interesting bit about this is the supply chain management assistance. I think that's probably the most valuable piece out of that package of services. The one thing is what if you are a reasonably established independent manufacturer and you don't choose to use Arrow's services and you don't have Arrow's badges? Are you now less likely to complete your funding because people aren't going to think you're up to the mark anymore? You know, you're not endorsed.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of factors that go into crowdfunding, and, you know, some of them are credibility of the company. A lot of it hinges on what the video looks like. You know, many people will back based solely on the PR video at the top of, I mean, that's why the video is right at the top of every project on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Many people back solely based on that. Others will just like brand allegiance or utility or cost or there's a ton of reasons. And I think this might push some over the edge, but then there's already other factors that cause people to prefer one over another, like the editor's picks that you have on Kickstarter or staff picks that they have on Indiegogo. I think we'll have to see. I'm not sure if, you know, some projects will feel bad that they didn't get the star and then will feel like, you know, obliged to take on Arrow as a partner. I don't know.
Well, the main event, F1 2015, the game, is available on Steam for Linux and Steam OS.
Has that just been released on Windows and everywhere else?
Who's in the name?
I'm guessing last year, maybe.
Well, that's why I was asking, because I wondered whether they waited a year to release the stuff based on last year's events.
Oh, I see. I don't know, Laura. All I know is it's Formula One, it's a racing game, it's a AAA title, and it's on Linux.
Sorry, I fell asleep.
Sorry?
What?
Not big on driving games.
Or that?
No, Mark isn't big on driving games. He's big on programming games.
Yeah.
Games that replicate his job.
I only play racing games as a general rule. So I have purchased this, but unfortunately, because I'm busy in my spare time doing all these open sourcey bits and pieces, I won't actually get to play it until November, which is when I have a month of not doing any open source stuff. So it's just going to sit there taking up space on my hard disk. But it looks the bee's knees.
If you can make a racing game look like you're programming a mainframe, Mark would be right in there. Is that right?
Isn't something that called like that. Laser cycles or...
Yes, Tron light cycles. Anyway, super news, good stuff. Well done, game developers.
Right. Next up, Microsoft has struck a patent deal with Chinese manufacturer. I'm not sure how to pronounce this.
Xiaomi.
I'm going to say Xiaomi.
Xiaomi.
Oh, good. Is that what everyone else says?
Yeah.
So the deal here is that Microsoft is selling 1,500 patents to Xiaomi. Mm. And in return, it's basically getting the patents licensed back in some kind of cross-licensing deal. And Xiaomi are agreeing to install Microsoft software on its phones. But in the article, it specifically said Office and Skype, etc. So it sounds like they're going to be making Android phones, but with Microsoft apps on. They're not going to be making Windows phones.
Oh.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, this is the same thing they did with Cyanogen.
Yeah, what I thought this looked a bit familiar. Yes. Although selling the patents and then licensing them back or getting them free license back or something, it's an interesting...
Yeah, well, it sounds like the sort of the main thing that Xiaomi are after from this is that they're currently mostly in China at the moment, and this gives them a sort of a shield to go outside of China, because then if other companies who trade internationally and have a lot of patents come and bother them, they can say, well, we've got all these patents, and strike up some kind of deal with them as well. So I guess that's what they were hoping to get out of it. And maybe Microsoft are now at the stage where You know, they, I think over the past couple of years, we've seen their mobile strategy move towards the apps rather than the devices or the platform.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it might just be that this is them trying to get out of it while getting in with a company that's successful in China.
And the other thing is the software that's baked in, like average users don't remove or can't remove the software that's baked in at the factory. So that that will just stay there and get updated. You know, I know some audience, some in our audience and nerds will be shouting, no, I wipe my phone and install, you know, something clean. Well done you, but most people don't.
Yeah, my partner's latest phone came with all of Google's Office apps and all of Microsoft's Office apps.
That wow.
Just completely obliterated the amount of space available. It's ridiculous.
I'd never seen a Xiaomi phone. And then I was sat on a plane on the way home from America and I looked across and the guy next to me had one. And I went, ooh, is that a Xiaomi like MI2 or whatever they're called? Quite a new phone.
And he said,
And he said, yes. And he looked at my phone and he went, have you got a OnePlus X? we both have had a little bit of phone envy and compare and contrast. Yeah, it's good fun.
Cool.
Good.
Cool. In a case reminiscent of NPM's breaking the internet, more online package services have caused problems for downstream projects.
Hooray for reproducible builds.
So what's happened? I didn't quite follow all the threads of this.
There was a report posted on GitHub, an issue on Docker's GitHub issues page, where people were getting strange, spurious errors when they were updating their Docker images or when builds were being done or, you know, automated tests, Jenkins stuff were failing for lots of people. And it turned out to be not Docker's fault, but some other project that was used, PyPy, I think, which had changed something internally, which made some file that gets looked up online look different. And so all these jobs were expecting the file to look one way and it looked different and they all fell over.
Didn't just look different. They just weren't there in the old locations anymore either.
Ah, they were moved, were they?
Right. They were, yeah, they used a hashing system rather than a name-based
lookup. So what's PyPy do?
It's the Python package index. So think
NPM
the Python packages like apt-get. Yeah, so you can pip install name of Python module. And this affected Arch, Fedora, Mac ports, OpenBSD, FreeBSD, Chef, build out a whole raft of things. And there was lots of unhappy people. And it appeared to go on for a few weeks of, you know, things being broken and unbroken. But the fix has been put into the in-development version of PyPy, but the actual version is still busted, so...
Is this sort of thing suddenly become a thing, or has it always been a thing?
It's more of a thing now. You have a lot of interdependencies on open source projects, and not everything is hosted by yourself. You know, if you top to bottom host the whole stack yourself, then you know you can. If you break something, you're responsible. You unbreak it. Whereas when you're depending upon a service that's over here on GitHub or a service that's over there on some other third-party service or it's on Bitbucket, there is a lot more of that, you know, put your stuff in the cloud, then you're dependent upon somebody else's IT department and not your own.
In my last place I worked, I was working on a Java project and our sysadmins would not deploy anything unless they had a mirror of the library in the local Maven repository. And we thought that they were just being really, you know, how sysadmins can be.
But now you know why sysadmins are like that.
Fully agree with what they were doing.
And as a sysadmin, firewall your deployments. So with regards to PyPy, I've used a project called PyPy Server in the past. And it is a proxy to the PyPy Server, but you can put your own packages in there. And you can cache as well. So when PyPy goes away, because in the old days it did used to just disappear and stop working, and if you're in the middle of a deployment, that was bad. So firewall your deployment so it can carry on, and you're responsible for, you know, your deployment and your end-to-end tests running, regardless of your upstream project being available.
Mm. In other news, Microsoft have revealed some information about how the Windows subsystem for Linux, WSL or LXSS or whatever it's called today, how it works. And it's interesting and worth a read if you're interested in knowing how the whole Ubuntu on Windows, Bash on Windows thing works.
If you like kernels and process management, it's fascinating.
Mm. Yes, exactly. So maybe worth a read.
And there's some follow-on articles coming on that are going to expand on this first piece as well. So it's definitely a series worth following.
And finally, Mark Zuckerberg has had his password breached for his Twitter and Pinterest accounts, which isn't very cool. So it seems like his login details were exposed from the by the recent LinkedIn password dump, which presumably means he used the same username and password.
Why does he even have a LinkedIn account? I mean, you know, if he ever goes for a job interview, who is this loser who's coming for a job interview? Oh, you know, he's just the guy who runs the biggest social network on the planet. Yes, but what's his LinkedIn account? I want to see
who's he connected with.
Yes.
What they've endorsed him for.
Yeah, endorsed him for password security. Nope.
Anyway.
And is that the end of the news?
I believe so.
And now it's time for the community news and events. And I think only a couple of weeks ago we mentioned that Snapcraft had been updated to 2.something, maybe 2.7. And we've just had another announcement that Snapcraft has now been updated to 2.9 and Snapd 2.0.5 has been released. So they're moving fast on this over in the snappy department of the company.
And what magic does this give us?
I have no idea.
Okay.
We'll put the links in the show notes.
So you can go find out for yourself.
You certainly can.
Martin.
A systemd developer has requested that tmux and similar projects add code to support systemd's new way of handling detached processes. And that's all I know about this.
So the first thing I saw about this was Stuart Langridge ranting about the fact that he NoHub would no longer work, and he likes to run NoHub on a server to run something in the background and then disconnect. And with this new way of working in systemd, that would not be the way you would do it. Mm-hmm. Similarly, if you connect to a server and ever run screen or tmux to multiplex and have lots of things running and then disconnect so you can go home with your laptop, then that also would be broken by this new advanced development in systemd. And so the systemd developers have suggested that other people need to fix their stuff to accommodate the new way of working in systemd.
I didn't recognize it from that write-up, but yes, I have seen this. I'm not impressed about this either.
So Instagram have killed off the Instagram scope for the Ubuntu phone users. Or you could see it as the API was deprecated and it's now stopped working.
Yeah, this is a shame when you bake something into a platform and you're using some public API and then they change it or deprecate it. You know, your thing goes away.
How long has it been deprecated for? Or did they just suddenly say, nope, off?
I think they made an announcement it was going away about 9 months ago.
Okay.
Then the date for it going away has come round.
Right. So basically no one did anything about it.
Right.
Oh, well.
Yes.
Is there a new API?
Yeah.
So someone needs to update that then.
Yeah.
Well, it's open source, so someone could do that.
Someone could do that. Yes. Someone could have done that already and didn't.
That is also
Or it's
true.
Being done right now, for all we know.
Yes, maybe that as well.
If you're doing it, email show at ubuntupodcast.org.
Or tweet us at ubuntupodcast.
Next, Ubuntutu, which is ADB for human beings, has been released. So ADB is the Android debug bridge, is that correct?
Yes.
So this is the tool which you use for doing various sort of low-level commands like flashing new images and stuff on your Android or Android-supporting but running Ubuntu device. And this is a GUI for doing the things that ADB can do but without having to do it in the shell. Am I right?
Yes, basically. Because, you have to... So it's basically a graphical front end to ADB. You know, so ADB is, you know, you type ADB push to send a file to the phone, and ADB pull to grab a file from the phone, and ADB reboot, and ADB this, and ADB that. And that, you know, anyone who's done any development work on an Android device, you know, knows all of these ADB syntaxes off the top of their head. But someone who's got an Ubuntu desktop and goes and gets an Ubuntu phone and wants to do something a little bit tricksy with ADB, there's a whole new universe they've got to learn, or a bunch of commands they copy and paste off the internet. And this just makes that a bit more friendly by having a graphical wrapper around it, so you don't have to paste commands in a terminal.
Something that caught my eye about this actually is all the build instructions of OS X. So this is obviously someone who's been doing stuff with Ubuntu phones on OS X and wants it to look pretty.
Nice. Cool. In other news, there's a couple of articles on OMG Ubuntu where they state that with wireless convergence on the Pro 5, the Ubuntu phone levels up.
Wireless convergence.
Yes, wireless convergence. So
this is where you can connect your phone to a display, but without having to plug it in.
Yes.
Awesome.
The Meizu Pro 5 and the BQ M10 are the first devices that support it. The Pro 5 has a graphical option. You press a button and it does it, whereas the M10 hasn't got that yet. It's a command line tool.
Do you have to SSH in and...
No, you can open the terminal. Dude, right. We've got a terminal.
Sorry.
you open the terminal, run a couple of commands, and it achieves the same thing.
Right. So what wireless screen sharing method does it use to do this?
Miracast.
Right.
Yeah, so the protocol is Miracast, and I think, Laurie, you've got a Miracast device, haven't you? We've talked about that in the past, haven't we?
Yes, I have one of those.
And the software implementation on the phone side is something called Ethercast, and that does the broadcasting of the display over to the dongle. There's very few dongles that are supported at the moment. Unfortunately, one of the ones that's well supported is a Microsoft dongle. So all the videos you see of people trying this out, there's a great big Microsoft logo on the screen up until you connect the phone to the display. I made a little video of me doing this because I tested it out for the first time when the phone arrived. I went into the lounge, plugged the dongle in, and made a little video of me pressing the button on my phone and it connecting to my TV in the lounge. And it's a 1-minute video, and it's had thousands of views of people just watching me connect a phone to my TV. It's quite funny. Yes. Amazing. But it works. Yeah.
Cool.
UNEP has selected Snaps and Ubuntu to bring IoT apps to its NAS.
Ooh.
So QNAP are a well-known manufacturer of NAS devices, all the way through from small home devices to sort of in home enthusiast devices, small office, home office, and all the way up to rack mountable stuff. And what they've announced is that they are going to adopt Snaps as the means to package the additional facilities and services that people are accustomed to being able to install on NASes. So let's say, for example, you want a media server add-on. That could be a Snap now, but also to bring other IoT functionality to their range of devices. And they've identified that Snaps make it trivial to package that stuff and trivial to deploy, and because of its isolated nature, it won't interfere with the core operating system that is powering the fundamental NAS services. So it's a real win, and I think they're going to have first mover advantage here, and it'll be interesting to see what some of the other NAS manufacturers do if this becomes a common way of doing things, because if it is, then a bit like the old OPKG stuff, you know, on the embedded devices, Snaps could become, you know, that ubiquitous format on these sorts of devices.
Oh,
and the interesting thing is that gets, you know, with someone else looking after the operating system, with, you know, Canonical dealing with all the updates to the core OS and app developers doing their Snaps, it means that the people who manufacture the device don't have to worry really too much about, you know, apps and having to package them themselves, because third-party developers can do that, and, you know, we can do the security updates on the core.
Yeah, and it was always a problem, you know, having lots of these apps enabled could introduce incompatibilities, you know, on the system and what have you, because you have to sort of lump in all of this stuff together. You know, you have to have PHP, MySQL, Apache, and then all of your applications clobbered in there as well. So it's a nice way to separate that stuff out. So I imagine the QA process will be easier for them too.
And finally, quite liking doing that. PCMag.com have published an interview with Jane Silber, who is the Canonical CEO, just about how she got into tech and stuff. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's a good read. Interesting to hear how she's encountered different cultures and different ways of working, and how she's had to deal with, you know, different different cultures and their opinion on approach to working with women. It's very, very interesting.
Cool. All right. We'll put that in the show notes. Let's move on to some events. And first off, 28th of June in San Francisco is the Red Hat Summit. It's a showcase for the latest and greatest in cloud computing, platform virtualization, middleware storage, and systems management buzzwords. You can find out more at redhat.com/summit.
Martin.
Texas Linux Fest is an annual community-run conference for Linux and open-source software and hardware users and enthusiasts from around the Lone Star State. It's in Austin, Texas, in America, from the 8th of July to the 9th of July, and you can find out more at texaslinuxfest.org.
And there's LinuxCon Japan, the premier Linux conference in Asia that brings together a unique blend of core developers, administrators, users, community managers, and industry experts. And that's the 13th of July in Tokyo.
Boss Talk Live is a free evening of live Linux podcasts featuring Linux Voice, Linux Luddites, and us. It's at King's Cross in London in the United Kingdom. It's on Saturday, the 6th of August this year. And you can find out more at fosstalk.com.
And finally, UbuntuCon Europe is the very first European Ubuntu conference announced for November this year. It's 18th to the 20th of November at Unperfect House in Essen in Germany. You can find out more at ubucon.org. And I think I'm going, and so are you, Martin.
I am.
Yay.
Apparently I'm going to be talking, but I don't know what about yet.
Excellent. And that's all the events for this week.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@UbuntuPodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And that's all for episode 15. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week when we will be discussing...
Stuff
about...
enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm around Ubuntu.
You didn't sound very enthusiastic about that, Mark.
Yes. I might have forgotten what I was meant to say there.
That holiday really fried your brains, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah. But we will also be bringing you some command line love.
And feedback.
Lots of feedback.
See you next time.
Thanks very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Then.